last week, the student, having realized the truth, says that this whole world, which was full of sorrow, now gives me joy. The world remains the same. The world has not changed, but that individual has discovered that I am joy. I am bliss. Most of us look for pleasure. You know, things in the world give us pleasure, some sense object or some material possession. But one who has discovered this inner bliss, then that same world gives him total joy, because he says everything is that one Lord alone. And for that, he again and again bows down to his guru, his teacher, for having changed his vision. The teacher does not change the world. All he does is changes our vision. And once that happens, everything is joy, everything is bliss. What is that person's vision? How this person, does the person see the world? And how does he deal with the world? We'll talk a little bit more about it. And why don't more people experience it? Why don't more people pursue it? So the teacher will explain that. It's verse number 14.
Aho sadekatva vilokanena. Aho sadekatva vilokanena. Vibheda bhava sakalo vinashtaha. Vibheda bhava sakalo vinashtaha. Swasman pashyam anumatram anyad. Swasman pashyam anumatram anyad. Mahadbhuta kinnu sadatma bhavaha. Bhuta kinnu sadatma bhavaha.
So he says, aho, oh, wonder. You know, it's like, oh, you know, suddenly he, what a wonder. When something is wonderful, you say, oh, how wonderful it is. So here he says, aho.
Sad ekatva vilokanena.
Vilokanena means having seen clearly. Viloka means not only seeing, but having experienced. You know, one is you have seen the food, but then once you have eaten and becomes one with you, that is called experience. Or as we heard last week, you might have seen pictures of Golden Gate Bridge and somebody has gone there and described to you how long it is and how high and how many pillars and how beautiful and although how many years it took to build. And he has even shown you a video, you know, of him walking on that bridge. But all that is secondhand knowledge. When you yourself drive and then walk on the bridge and experience its grandeur and beauty, then you say, aha, now I know what my friend was talking about. So here also, this person has now himself or herself clearly experienced what? Sad ekatva, the oneness of the truth. Oneness of the truth, having experienced. What happens? Vibheda bhava sakala vinashtaha. He says it is completely destroyed. Vinashtaha. What is destroyed? Vibheda bhava. This distinction between I and me and I and mine and you and yours. And this separateness of the individual from the world is completely vinashta. Nashta means destroyed. Vinashta means visheshana nashta, means completely destroyed. Not even a trace of his old ignorance remains in this wise person. Why? He says, swasmat, aside from me, pashyami anumatram anyata. Even a trace of difference does not remain between him and the others. Between me and the world, he says, the whole world is me. That experience, not even a trace of difference. He has absolutely no separateness from anybody, no distinction, no love, no hatred, no special. Everything is one. Anyat, aside from me, there is nothing else. That his experience is. And then he calls it adbhuta. He calls it a wonder. He says maha adbhuta means a great wonder. You know, like we have seven wonders of the world. You see, this is even greater than all the seven wonders put together, the wonder of this wise person.
Maha Adbhuta Kinnu Sadatma Bhava.
This experience is indeed wonderful, this vision of the truth. It is indeed wonderful. It is a wonder. I'll talk a little bit about what is this wonder and why it is a wonder. In the commentary, Swamiji has written a verse from the Bhagavad Gita.
Ascharyavad pasyati kaschidenam, ascharyavad vadati tathaiva chanyah, ascharyavad chain manyah shrunoti, shrutvapyanenam vedana chaiva kaschit.
So he says, it is a wonder that very few people see this. It is so obvious, the truth, that it's always with us. It is our essential nature. It is the eye of my eye. It is the mind of my mind. It is the ear of my ear. And yet we fail to perceive it. We fail to know it. We fail to see it. We fail to experience it. Not only that, but they say it is the reason because of which you are moving your hand, and then you say, where is God? I haven't seen God. And they go around, have you seen God? Do you know where God lives? You go ask the saints and all. I mean, nothing can be more obvious, nothing can be more clear than your own self, because that is what you are. So it says it is a wonder. The teacher says, Ascharyavat Pashyati Kaschidenam. Very few people even make an attempt to discover the truth. And out of those that make an attempt, few of them do discover it. And it is a wonder. And those are the ones whom we worship as the prophets, as the saints. And out of the ones who have experienced the truth, Ascharyavad Vadati Tathaiva Chanyah, and how many of them go out and speak about it? You know, most of them, they sit, if they are sitting in their meditation in the Himalayas or in the forest, in the monasteries, they merge into that truth. And they have no desire to come out because they are in that extreme state of bliss. Where, why should then they come out and, you know, work in the world? I mean, they may do whatever is minimum, but having experienced the truth, there is nothing more for them to experience. There is nothing more for them to know. There is nothing more to be done. Because that's the greatest accomplishment. It is the greatest gain. It is the greatest success and the greatest joy. So having that, then why would they chase after the pennies of the world? But few of them out of compassion do that. They come out and preach. They come out and teach. They write all the scriptures. They write the books. And why do so few people do it? Partly because they see no desire, and partly because when they do, we persecute them. See, if there are 1,000 people and one is going in one direction and 999 are going in a different, and the one person says, you know, you guys are all wrong, guess what will happen to that one, you know? If he tells them, you guys are all wrong and, you know, you need to follow me, they'll say, who is this guy and what does he think he is? And so that's why all these saints get persecuted, you know, Jesus or Mirabai or, you know, Tukaram and Sant Gyaneshwar. Even our Swami Chinmayananda, the one who started the mission, when he was sitting with his guru in the Himalayas, he, having heard this knowledge, he said, I need to go out and share this knowledge with my countrymen and with the rest of the world. And his teacher told them, nobody will appreciate it. Plus, if you're running around and trying to organize lectures and all, you will get lost in that organization and trying to collect money and, you know. And just stay here and enjoy. And whoever wants to study can come. Like you came and studied from me. If somebody is desirous of studying the truth, he will come. But Swamiji said, no. You know, not that many people will come up to the Himalayas. I want to travel through the length and breadth of the country and tell the people of the world the glory of this knowledge. And fortunately he did. If he hadn't done that, we wouldn't have been sitting here, you know, discussing this. It was due to the great vision of one great soul that this whole worldwide mission started with. And his first talk, there were only 4 students. And he said there were 5, including the speaker, you know. And he continued, even though he had a lot of opposition and people opposed him because he was talking in English about this knowledge, which is ancient. And they said, you know, this is Sanskrit. It is not supposed to be spoken in English. It's not supposed to be given to everybody. And, you know, it's a secret knowledge. It has to be preserved. He had a lot of opposition, but he persisted. So that's, they're saying that very few people go out and speak about it. And they do it out of compassion for us, to share it with us. And then out of the, even if they go out and speak, how many people are there to listen? You know, how many people are there to listen to this knowledge? Like we said, and on Sunday we're lucky if we have 30 or 40 people out of more than 1,000. Even this meditation flyers, I must have given out about 700 or 800. And, you know, how many of them return? I mean, I don't do it for that purpose. Some of them are meditating on their own, even if they're not coming to the classes. But the point is that out of all the people, there are very few who actually want to sit down and listen to this knowledge. And he says the biggest wonder, he says that having heard the knowledge, they still don't change. They still don't hear it. Having heard from the teacher, having read from the scriptures, having understood, they have heard, but they have not listened. There has not been a change in their behavior. They go back to their old ways. So that is the wonder, you know, that how is it that people don't change? And why don't they change? So the teacher tells us. Actually, those of you who are doing the Kathopanishad on Tuesday, Neeru will be covering this subject, but I thought I'll steal her thunder. But anyway, she'll go in more detail on this with Prabhuji's, Swamiji's lectures. But he says, why don't the majority of the people change? He says for 4 reasons. One is that their actions are not righteous. They're not according to dharma, not according to the right action. And so their actions are not, so they're not doing the right things. They may be doing immoral things or illegal things or things that are not honest or just things that are not, you know, conducive to what spirituality is. They don't practice all the good values of love, compassion, brotherhood, kindness, and all that. The second reason is that people have no sense control. They don't have control over what they see, what they hear, what they smell, what they taste, what they touch, what they eat. People have very little self-control and they're just running after the senses. Not only the sense of the senses of perception, but the sense of action. We don't have control. We don't have control over what we say, what we do, you know, where we go. You know, we just indiscriminately go anywhere, say anything, listen to any gossip, you know, do wrong things. So our hands, our feet, our speech, our sense organs are not under our control. And so even when you listen to the truth, if your actions are not right, if you don't have sense control, then you won't. The knowledge will not penetrate. You may listen, you may read, you may even memorize, but the knowledge will not penetrate. The third problem is when they don't do these 2 things, then their mind is not peaceful. The mind is disturbed, the mind is agitated, the mind is always tense. And if your mind is not at peace, and also the mind is not pure because they're not doing the right things and they're not controlling their mind, so the mind is not peaceful, and an impure mind and an agitated mind, then no matter how many, even the Jesus himself may be sitting and preaching to such a person, it won't register, it won't help. So one has to cultivate these 3 things. Develop, do right things, do what is right, what the scriptures say, have some amount of sense control doesn't mean that you don't hear, smell, taste, nothing, you know, like the three monkeys of Gandhiji, you know, don't see anything here. No, but have control and be discriminate. What am I going to put in my body? What am I going to put in my eyes? What am I going to see? What am I going to hear? Be selective about what we watch on TV, what we hear in the radio, what, because we are intaking not only from our mouth, but from our eyes, from our ears, what kind of people I associate with, and consciously develop peace of mind, you know, through meditation, through prayer, through surrender of the ego, because the ego is the one that disturbs our mind. So as more and more you surrender your ego to the Lord, to that extent your mind is peaceful, because you say, you are the doer. Your will be done, O Lord, not mine, not mine, not mine. That understanding, when it comes, then such a person has instant peace of mind, because I'm not doing anything. The Lord is working through me. And the fourth point is that a lot of people, theoretically, they may understand. You know, they may have understood. They may have memorized the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita. They may be able to give beautiful talks. They're scholars of Sanskrit, or could be scholars of Latin or Greek, and, you know, talking about the Bible and, you know, all the scriptures and all the ancient texts. They may know it in theory only, but it has not changed their life. They have not brought it into their practice. So when these four things are not there, then the knowledge does not register. And this oneness we have talked about many times, but just to briefly go over, he says everything is me. I alone am. Because what the scriptures tell us, that God alone was. So God says, in fact, we studied this weekend with Swamiji, he says, God says, first I alone was. And now in this world, I alone am. Because when God alone was, where did all this earth come from? And space and fire and water and air and planets and stuff. Everything came from God alone. So God himself became the whole universe. He says, I alone was, I alone am, and I alone will be. Even when the world ends, then I alone will be. And that is true. God alone will be. Ultimately, this whole universe will end and everything will become a big black hole, and all the planets and stars and everything will be finished. And he alone is. And then a wise person, when he understands that my true nature, not me as this individual, as Anil or Diana or Sherry or Jigisha, not as that, but as I, as the self, the true self, the higher self, the infinite self. He understands that that one alone is the whole universe, and that oneness with God, when that appears, when he understands that I am this true self, not this limited body, mind, and intellect, then he says, I was. Now in the body I am, and when the body drops, I will be. So that wise person understands, I always was. There was never a time when I was not alive. And Gita, in the Gita, the teacher tells in the second chapter, he says, there was never a time when you and I were not there. And we are here, and there is never a time when you and I will not be there. So this appearance and disappearance of the body is only a temporary phenomenon. And if it is meant to happen, it will happen. As long as the time is there, you live happily, without complaining, without sorrow, without, just live cheerfully. Whatever time, O Lord, you have given me, let me be an agent of your service. Let me serve you. Sthirai rangaihi sushtu vagam sastanubihi yashema deva hitam yadayuhu. The student says, O Lord, the master says, whatever time you have given me, let me be, devote that in your service. Let my body be an instrument of service. And when it is time, if it comes time to drop the body, I can cheerfully do that. So then there is no I or mine in that individual. There is no I or mine, because everything is me. So then this is not mine, this is not mine, this is not yours. That spontaneous oneness. And then there is no ownership, there is no enjoyership, there is no possession. It does not mean that he's not enjoying it. But the doership is not there, that I am doing it or I am enjoying it. The Lord alone is, and that is me, and I alone am the whole universe. So that beautiful state of oneness and the beautiful state of joy comes. How does this person act in the world? What does he do? How does he work? How does she function? To say, spontaneously, whatever work has been assigned to that person, whatever situation that person is, the person does the job, whether it's a housewife, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a doctor, engineer, lawyer, whatever my situation is, I work. And either he works as a servant of the Lord in the path of devotion, in the path of love. He says, Lord, you are working, I am your instrument. I'm your servant. Or in the path of knowledge, he says, I am the self. And this, in my presence, this body, mind, and intellect is functioning. And let the body, mind, and intellect work. But I am beyond all that. So that does not mean that he doesn't care what he does. In fact, his actions become more pure because he is in touch with that. So whatever duties are assigned to him, he does that without complaints, without likes or dislikes. So this is why am I supposed to sweep the floor, or why am I supposed to? Whatever job is assigned, whatever situation he's placed, he does it very cheerfully. Talking about doing the job, this mother woke up the son. Said, son, wake up, wake up. He says, mother, I don't want to wake up. So she says, wake up. He says, why? He says, you have to go to the church. He says, there are two reasons why I won't go to the church. So she says, why? He says, I don't like church and nobody likes me. So she says, no, son, you have to go to the church. So he says, why? Why do I have to go to the church? She says, for two reasons. You're 59 years old and you are the pastor. So I guess even pastors have, their mothers have to wake them up. So this person's actions become pure, become spontaneous, and are guided by a higher power. He always feels that there is a higher power taking care of me, working through me. And he becomes a uniter, not a divider. Spirituality unites. It does not divide. If it divides, then it cannot be true spirituality. It cannot be true religion. There's a very, very beautiful story I heard, and I'll end with this story. So much wisdom. So there was this boy who one day school was out of school, so he goes to his father's shop, and his father was a tailor. And this was in the olden days when they used to stitch clothes by hand. You know, they didn't have machines and all that. So he saw his father. He was making a red and a white shirt, a women's shirt or something. And so he had his red cloth and he cut it into two pieces. And then he had a white cloth and he cut it. And then he put the scissor under his leg. He was sitting, you know, cross-legged on the floor. You know, that's how they work in India in the shop. So he had the scissor under his head. And then he took a needle and thread and he was joining the red and the white cloth, stitching them together to make, you know, a shirt. And then halfway when he had to stop for something, he put the needle of the thread in his cap. And so after a while, again, he had to cut. So he took out the scissor, again, he cut. And then with the needle, he put the scissor back. And with the needle, again, he sewed. Then he again put the needle in his cap. So the son says, father, why do you put that scissor under your leg and the needle on your cap, on your head? He said, son, in life there are two kinds of people, those that divide and those that unite. The scissor divides, it cuts, and so it has to be put under our feet because that we don't respect that. But one who unites, who brings together, the needle unites two pieces of cloth while the scissor cuts. So that we respect, that we put on our head. Such a wonderful truth, you know, in this simple story. So that is the man of wisdom. He unites us. You know, he sees oneness. He brings people together. If any religion divides you from somebody else, or any preacher or any teacher says, you know, we are separate and we are superior and you are inferior and we don't meet with these people. And in all the religions, it's as much there in Hinduism as there in Islam, as there in Christianity, in Jewish, it's in there in all the faiths. And the one who divides people is not spiritual. A true spiritual person will be like Jesus, where he says, see thy neighbor as thyself. So that wisdom is of the wisdom of the Upanishads, which was taught to us thousands of years ago, and which Swamiji here has given us, that be a wise person, do the right action, control your senses, quieten your mind, bring it into your actions, don't only make it a theoretical knowledge. Give up I or mine. Everything is he and his. That, and remember, I was, I am, I will be. I will never perish. Because I was never born. I was always there. When was God born? Never. He was always there. And I was there too. When you understand that I am that I am not this body, and make our actions spontaneous, service, and be a uniter. So that's the essence of this verse. Not all of it is covered, but some of it I got from the Upanishads and some from the commentaries. So it's very, very beautiful thoughts. It will need some thinking, and we should try and apply that in our life. Any comments?
I mean, I understand it's risky, but if you realize the truth, it just seems duty to share it.
No, it's not a question of risky. They did share it, but the students, they said that if the student has that much desire, we'll go and learn from them. And a lot of them did make ashrams. In the Himalayas, they set up little schools, residential, where people would come and stay and they would come and learn. In those days, transportation was not there. You couldn't travel from one city to another. You had to go by foot, or you had to go in the bullock cart. And they said, whoever has the desire will. And then they wrote books. Either they wrote them or they told to their students. So they did compose the Upanishads. And they, even till today, we are benefiting from that. But it depends on your inner nature. Some people have a lot of rajas, and they want to travel like Swami Chinmayananda. Even though he was a realized master, he had a lot of rajas in him. And so he wanted to travel everywhere and preach. But the knowledge is still there. See, what the Rishi wrote 8,000 years ago in the Upanishads, even today we are studying. To study the Kathopanishad. We are still studying the Kathopanishad. So they knew that this knowledge is never going to perish once it's given out, because it is the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, all the, Vedas, all of that, what they gave, even today people are studying and applying and changing. So not everybody has to drive throughout. Like Raman Maharishi, even he was in the 1940s. He was a realized master. He never traveled. He stayed in one place, in one temple, even though he was realized. And people used to tell him. In fact, one French newspaper journalist told him, you are such a great realized master, why don't you do something? He told him that, and Raman Maharishi only laughed. What he used to do was, he would, morning and evening, he would just come and sit in his chair. And thousands of people would walk by. A lot of them would come with a lot of questions. And they would sit in front of him, or they would walk. And as they came in front of him, that question got answered. They didn't need to ask. In fact, he only composed a couple of books in his lifetime. But so many thousand people just sitting in the presence of this great saint. He didn't need to travel the whole world. Even today we are studying about him. The books he has composed, we are studying, And people who go to that grave, actually I missed it last year when, 2 years ago when they went to South India. I was a little late. Nehru said that when you go sit there, and he has left his body about 70 years ago. He says even today you can feel his presence. so powerfully. So even now he's blessing the whole world. So they don't necessarily have to give talks on TV to bless the world. That is a very small part. It's more their presence which blesses. They say the rain falls because of good people. The earth is blessed because of these people. So that's a very small part of giving talks. They're doing their job much more than the job. In fact, people like me who talk and all are wasting our time. No, really, it is the silence. Most of the teaching is done in silence. Most of the teaching is done. It's an exchange of it's an intellectual and the spiritual connection. It's not the verbal.
The intellect become evil, or does the mind become evil? Or do they both become evil?
Both. I think.
And what comes evil first, the mind or the intellect?
No, the mind actually. The mind is the weaker one.
So
the mind and the intellect is supposed to control the mind.
Right.
But under the pressure of the vasanas, right, the mind becomes, which is very weak, right, turns towards evil, and the intellect, which is supposed to control, when the intellect gets taken over by the mind, then the person becomes evil. If the intellect were to control the mind, because the intellect is supposed to have the right knowledge, but when the intellect also joins, then this person becomes a very powerful right weapon of evil.
And then the body can feed it.
Body has no choice.
Just like fuel on the fire.
Right, body is a car, you know, wherever you take it, it will go. The body has no choice. It is the vasanas that control it.
Right, so that's the biggest reason for self-discipline.
Yes.
So you can condition the mind to resist the evils.
The pressure of the body. Yeah, that's why we said, you know, right action and sense control. These are the two things that. Right. And Swami, in that Pathways to Peace, Swami Ishwarananda, the retreat that he did, he talked about the cycle. Actually, if you don't have that CD, you should get it. It's available in the office. It's a beautiful CD where he talks about the cycle, how the vasanas lead to, you know, desires, you know, lead to thoughts, to desires, and to wrong actions.
People that have nothing can be so happy because right, they realize they don't have the vasanas, and the light is inside them, and it shines, and you can just see that they're bright, and they spread it.
Right. Right. And then the wrong actions further strengthens the wrong vasanas, so right, it's a cycle. So that is, but that's a good point. Thank you.
Putin's doing his boss,
Putin. Yeah, I know. I mean, and these people are accumulating so much negative karmas, you know, by torturing others. It's unbelievable how much they will suffer, you know, the consequences. They don't realize that. Right. And that's absolutely correct, because right now we are in ignorance. We think ourselves to be this body, mind, and intellect. And so in ignorance, the path of devotion is easy. Oh, Lord, you and I are separate, but you are almighty. I am helpless. You take care of my life.
Surrender.
And that's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that. But as you become wiser and as your vasana pressure gets less, as you realize that my true nature is I, that bigger I, not this little I, not this jigisha, but that I, that the infinite consciousness is me. I am not separate. Then that is that state of oneness. And so it is a gradual progression. Initially, it's I alone. You know, first is I am so great. I am the greatest person. And slowly you say, no. There is a Lord who is working through me. So slowly humility has come in. The ego has become a little bit less. You say, I am a humble servant of the Lord. And that is good. But then slowly you understand that there is only one. There is no two. And whatever, even this body, mind, and intellect is also that. Then this person also does not hate his body. He does not say, oh, this body is a filthy thing. He says, the body is me too, as is the self. Everything, when everything is one, then the clean, dirty, everything is that oneness. Then that body becomes an instrument of service, but I am in that state of bliss. So it's a gradual. So, but the reason I say he and I, because I feel that still I am, all of us, at least I am not, maybe, you know, some of you maybe, but I still feel that I am at the very basic level, and it's okay to think of God as, see, as long as you think you are the body, you will think of God as a form. Like somebody asked Raman Maharishi, does God have his form or formless? Raman Maharishi, the one who used to sit and never go anywhere. So he never answered anybody's question. He never did. he would always turn the attention to the I. So he said, you are asking me, is God or God is form or formless? I'm asking you, are you form or formless? Do you have a form or do you have are you formless? If you say, I have a form, then God has a form too. Because then you are caught in this little form of this male, you know, so many, so 5 feet, 6 inches, you know, this, that, and the other. But if you say, I am formless, means I am unlimited, then God is unlimited too. You will not be able to experience that formless self till you become formless. When you say, I am formless, I am not confined to this body, then you are realized. Then you become one with that. So, he never answered any question. He always made the questioner think. And that's how he elicited the answer from the questioner. I mean, it's not that he didn't know the answer or didn't want to answer, but he wanted the questioner to think. That's the beauty of these great saints. I hope that answers your question.
Time is the greatest trust.
True, because time gets us all. Yeah, they are caught in time, you're right. But they go beyond time. Once they go through that, then they become timeless, because that true entity is timeless. He was there before time. Actually, he or it. Even to say he is wrong. It, that consciousness that we call God, was there before time. There was no time.
There still isn't.
No.
my question is, God, in my understanding, can be form or formless. He can be whatever he wants to be at any time.
Right.
He can take any form. He can take any formless. We as humans, I'm not convinced that we have that choice, that we can be one or the other. We're a spiritual being having a human experience, you know, but I'm not sure that we can get out of the dual nature of who we are by just meditating our way to bliss.
Right. Well, these...
I mean, that's a question.
Right. These rishis have done it. They have described that.
Yeah.
If you read the works of these rishis, even Swami Chinmayananda, when he talks in the Bhagavad Gita, you can see that he's talking from experience. Not only that, not only even the rishis, but if you listen to the saints, the Christian saints, some of these writers, there was a famous lady, I can't remember, but when she talks about that truth, she talks exactly from the Upanishads. She has never studied, but her experience is exactly the same. And a lot of people have experienced it, where they have experienced that form, their formless nature. They still continue to work through the body. So it's a gradual process. Right now we are so caught in our body identification. But as you slowly evolve...
No, as you slowly age.
Yeah.
That goes away gradually.
True, but then it's sometimes it's too late. Time to start is when you are young. Because this is, it's not an overnight journey. It takes time. So the sooner you start, the more ahead you are in the game. Otherwise, you have to take another birth or multiple births to go through it. But no, it can be experienced. Otherwise, realization is useless. If I'm going to experience it sometime thousands of years from now, what use is that? I want to realize right now. So to experience that formless state, you want to experience it now, right here in this human body. Otherwise, it is, what use is it? Otherwise, why would we be studying it? So it is possible. But at least we are here thinking about it, talking about it, made it our goal. If it happens, you know, good. Otherwise, continue the journey and next lifetime. But one should have a desire for liberation, mumukshutvam. I must have a desire for liberation. I'm tired of this multiple lifetimes of ignorance. I want to get out of that. So that one should must have. At least develop that in this lifetime, if nothing else. Right. Nothing else. Well, in a way, this point is right, that if you don't accept Jesus, you will suffer in hell. But these people have not understood what Jesus meant when he said that. When Jesus said that, he did not mean the body of Jesus or the building in which the name of Jesus is said. When he said Jesus represents certain values. Jesus represents love. Jesus represents compassion. Jesus represents wisdom. Jesus represents sharing. Jesus represents kindness. So one who does not practice what Jesus stood for, love, compassion, kindness, sharing, brotherhood, he will suffer in hell. His life will be hell. So what Jesus said has not been understood by these people. That's my opinion. I may be totally wrong.
No, you're not. In fact, he said, I am the truth, the way, and the life.
Absolutely.
And that is exactly what you just got finished saying.
Right.
So you can't be an ignorant person
with
a weak mind.
Right.
And think that you're going to experience the truth. And oil and water don't mix.
Right. And nobody.
There's a verse in there. That's mm-hmm. where the Christians kind of
lost it.
Yeah, they think that why did Jesus die for our sins? And where does mercy come in? If you're going to get better and better through multiple lifetimes, is there a need for a savior?
Right.
I'm just asking that question.
No, absolutely. So. And it's not only Jesus, it's the same in all the, look at Muslims. Anybody who doesn't believe in Islam should be killed. He's a kafir. Even in Hindus, people who worship Shiva, they say Shiva alone is that. Anybody who worships Vishnu, they used to actually kill each other in the olden days. The Shaivites and the Vaishnavites would have wars just on this issue that who is greater. So it is there in all the religions. They have not understood. That
Christians killed each other.
Yes, they still do in Ireland. Yeah, in Ireland, Protestant and Catholic.
Butchering each other.
Across the street, one side of the street was Protestant and one was Catholic, and they would be throwing bombs.
Terrible.
And they both would have Christian churches, and they would bomb each other's churches.
This is like in the 16th, 1700s.
Yeah. No, even the 20th century.
Yeah. That's what I mean, but it's been going on for hundreds,
hundreds of years. So it's not understanding the prophet. It is a lack of right understanding, and that is all it is. None of the prophets wanted to be dividers. They were all united. Love of power. Look at the Pope. I'm not talking about this one, but look at the whole institution. It's so much money and so much power, and it's the same in all. Look at all these mullahs. They have all become rulers. They have become kings of, Arabia and, Iran and all. Even in India, some of these religious heads, they have so much money. And they have such
a ruse to get their power.
Yeah, and look at these people, even in some of these evangelists, they're flying in chartered planes and they have the helicopters. Because religion has unfortunately become a business and has become a way of controlling the people and accumulating power. And that was never the intention of any of the prophets. None of them. You look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at Shankaracharya, look at any great prophets or saints. None of them preached that. So it's a wrong understanding, and unfortunately it's okay. Like, it's his world. Let him worry about it.
Exactly.
Your world, you take care of it. I'll just take care of my mind. I just, don't let anybody disturb my peace of mind. That is the number one thing I have learned in this, that keep your mind peaceful at all costs. No matter how much sorrow comes, in the Gita, it says, Yasmin sthitona dukhena gurun api vichalyate. He says this wise person, once he or she has experienced and understood this knowledge, then the greatest mountains of sorrow and problems may come. He is not disturbed. So that is the hallmark of a wise person, that I am fine irrespective of what happens to my body. When that understanding comes, then Krishna says, even the world's mountain of sorrows may fall on you, but you will not be disturbed. And that is the hallmark of this wisdom. We must practice that, apply that, because in life things will happen. Situations will happen, problems will come, but we have to always remember what he taught in the Gita and what we have studied in the scriptures.
In life, the road always turns.
Yes.
One way or the other.
Right. Nothing is permanent.